This is Emily Wright, tech editor and head of special projects at EG, and you've guessed it, we're still here. And today I'm joined by our London editor, Louise Jansfield, which is a real treat because actually, Louise, you haven't been on this podcast for a few weeks. How are you?
I'm good, thank you, Emily. Yeah, it's been a bit busier over the last few weeks than it was prior to my last appearance on this podcast.
Yeah, and how are you doing? How are you finding sort of continuing lockdown? And I know it's easing a bit now, but how are you finding things?
To be honest, I suppose I haven't really done a huge amount. I mean, a lot of the pubs and everything aren't really open around me as yet. It will be interesting to see what happens going forwards. My hours of work seem to increase. That's one thing I can say.
Yes, not so much working from home as living at work. I think that's the phrase, isn't it? Well, you've had a very busy week this week, and I think we should just dive straight in. And could you tell us about your big London story this week? Because it's one that I think everybody will want to hear about if they haven't already read about it, of course.
Yes, so obviously this week, JTRE, developer from Slovakia, obviously beat around 10 other bidders to go under offer on a development site called 60 Aldgate, being sold by 4C Hotels and Transport for London. Interestingly, it actually went for substantially more than its guide price of 40 million. It's went for over 45. So that's a bit of a boost to the market, which has obviously been a bit stagnant during lockdown. And also it just shows that, you know, for the right site, I suppose, and even though it's an office development, and obviously there's lots of debate over offices at the moment and the future of them, developers still want those sites in central London because, you know, the likes of Nuveen, Great Portland Estates and Helical were all bidding, and Lincoln Property, an American company. So it's busied up a bit. And I suppose it kind of goes off the back. There were a couple of other deals last week where Trinova Real Estate and Stars Re acquired 103 Mount Street in Mayfair, slightly under what Mayor Bergman paid for it in 2015. But it's still good core income property and prices are still holding up, I suppose. Everyone keeps saying it's a buyer's market at the moment, but pricing's still holding up because there's still quite a lot of money looking to invest in London, I'm told at the moment. And then on the back of that, and obviously developers looking to, buy more sites to build up their pipelines due to the dwindling development pipeline going forwards. We're seeing a lot of planning happening. You know, Canary Wharf have obviously this week put in for North Quay again, revised plans. That's over, you know, it's around 3.5 million square foot of development there between next to the Crossrail station. And we've seen BT get planning Orion get planning for revamping BT's soon to be former HQ in the city. And also we've seen a flurry of others, such as 7 Newgate, which obviously AXA are moving out of to go into 22 Bishopsgate later this year, I think it is, or maybe next year. And then Tenacity, obviously the Hong Kong-based company run by Patrick Wong, have obviously unveiled their plans to put an all-electric tower on 55 Gracechurch Street. So there's a lot going on and people are busy despite lockdown. I suppose it's been a bit quieter on the leasing side of things in London recently, but obviously we have seen from a CBRE's latest market view report for central London this week that JLL is under offer on around 132,000 square foot at 1 Broadgate, which is obviously it would be a massive pre-let for British Land if that goes forward, because they got planning last year to redevelop that site. Although it's interesting, I suppose, in the fact that initially when JLL launched their requirement, we obviously reported that it was 180,000 square foot they were looking for. So that's obviously shrunk down a little bit through the over the last couple of years since they launched it in 2017. It'll be interesting to see what happens there and kind of what their plans are. And I suppose we've also seen Baker McKenzie finally sign up at 280 Bishopsgate, CBRE GI's development there. I mean, we tipped that back in January. So, I mean, it probably shows that it's taking occupiers a very long time to kind of make up their minds and, you know, sign on the dotted line, so to speak. But, you know, those that have to move and, you know, need to move because they've got lease events, you know, they are doing so. It's just taking a bit more time and effort. However, central London, I know, having spoken to quite a few people, although it's slightly busier than it was a couple of weeks ago, it's still very quiet. Someone was saying to me this week that they'd been walking through Carnaby and while all the shops were open, it was still pretty dead, unfortunately. And obviously, people are looking to, you know, how they're going to spark life back into London.
Well, what a lot there. And it's very encouraging to hear that things are busying up, as you said at the beginning. Certainly on some sides of things anyway. I know you said that leasing's still a little bit on the slow side, and obviously that final comment there about London itself, you know, footfall and activity, it's just taking a bit longer, I think, for that to all catch up. And you know, who knows how long that will take. I think that, you know, the commuting aspect of it and the transport aspect of it still remains a bit of an issue. It's not so much being in the city and being in the offices as it's how people are going to get there. But you are a London expert, and that was a lot of information there. So you've got a really good picture as to kind of what's going on in the city. What do you think are the key takeaways from the news that we're seeing over the last few weeks? You know, the sort of the uptick in activity. You know, it was interesting. You said that lots of people are saying, "Oh, you know, it's a buyer's market." But is it? You know, that was, you know, sort of a pretty hefty increase on the guide price that you mentioned as well. So it feels like it's a bit case by case at the moment in terms of how the city's looking.
Yeah, I think it is a bit case by case. I mean, I think there's potentially more of, I suppose, on value add, not so much pure development sites or core income property. There's probably a little bit more kind of difference in pricing expectations between sellers and buyers on value add, and just because I suppose there's a lack of liquidity in the debt market at the moment, but there is still a lot of, you know, there's still a lot of money, there's still a lot of people looking to invest. I mean, I suppose it will be interesting to see, depending on what happens with capital gains tax going forward, and what that brings up as to how that impacts the market. And I suspect there will be a lot of investors keeping an eye on that going forwards. Obviously, until we get some more clarity on what the government's going to do there, it's all a bit pure speculation. But I suppose, you know, if you buy a building and you invest a lot of money in, you know, bringing a building up to, you know, grade A, you know, and then you're going to lose a lot of the profit potentially on it, you know, that may cause some people to second think and second guess as to whether they should invest in a value add property as well. And I suppose the other thing we have got on the horizon going forwards, I suppose with governments going in and EU going into a summer recess, is Brexit. And I suspect
not that again. God, I thought we were done with that.
Unfortunately not. It's already starting to creep up. It comes up in conversations occasionally now. And I, you know, there is still no sign of a deal. I suppose it's the real big worry. And yeah, people are predicting a really busy fourth quarter, but I would probably, yeah, say Brexit may impact that if we get to, you know, the end of October and there's still no sign of a deal. Because I suspect people will be waiting to see what happens with the sterling, and if the pound drops again, you know, there's a good deal there to be had. So it's, I think everyone's kind of sitting and watching. And also there's just a lack of motivated sellers at the moment in the market, because You know, we don't know what's happening with valuations. We've seen some big hits on valuations among the REITs off the back of rents. And we just don't know with the until all the government support disappears later this year. We just don't know really, I suppose, what the state of play is going to be there. Mm-hmm. So they're probably some of the key questions going forwards.
It feels like for the last few years, in particular, if we're looking at the UK specifically, look at Brexit and then look at what's happened this year, just been unable to catch a break, really. I think that, the beginning of this year was gearing up to be, a good year for the economy, a good year for the sector potentially. Obviously with Brexit kind of in the background, everybody hoping that it would all get sorted, and then the pandemic struck. So it's been a tough few years. Be interesting to see how long this goes on for, because the uncertainty is what is so destabilizing, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Not knowing what's going to happen going forwards. And I suppose particularly as well with, you don't want people to lose sight of kind of the sustainability angle and the climate change issues amongst everything else. I'm sure you saw it overnight, Trump suggesting that to get to net zero carbon in buildings, we wouldn't be able to have windows.
yeah, extraordinary. Extraordinary. Yes, if anyone hasn't seen that or read about it, then it's well worth punching that into Google. We look at what's going on over here. I should be careful I don't become too political, but we look at what's going on here, and then just look across the pond, and I do fear the types of conversations that go on over there in the higher echelons of power. But anyway.
Mind you, I suppose, there's also the fact that people are getting a little bit exasperated here as well with decision making. I mean, that's another big thing that I think is also stopping people going back to offices, and obviously therefore bringing a bit of life back into central London, is just there's just some confusing messages around. I mean, I think we're still in the don't get on public transport if you don't need to phase, and also don't go to work if you can work at home. And yet there was also then, a go to work message as well. And then do we or do we not need to wear masks when we're in the office? Yeah, I think people are just a bit confused, and it's just easier to stay at home while the confusion kind of plays itself out, unfortunately.
Yes, absolutely. I think a lot of people feel similarly in that boat. It is quite confusing. Well, it's very confusing. I think the work from home if you can, but also go back to work if you can message was particularly confusing. So let's see how that plays out. And, maybe it will be a question of a tipping point. Maybe some companies will start to slowly return. I spoke to Mark Ridley earlier this week, and he was in the office, and it'd be interesting to see who follows suit. And I've been doing quite a few calls with people based over in New York recently as well, and quite a few of them are back in their offices too. So let's see what happens. And it's a shame that we don't have the Amsterdam model, and that most people are able to commute on foot or by bicycle. So for them, they're all pretty much back. It just shows how crucial the infrastructure network is here in a city like London, and what sort of damage can be done when it's sort of rendered a bit unusable, as I think a lot of people see it at the moment, and the impact that's having on the city's economy is quite dramatic. So thank you very much for joining me. If you were going to leave our listeners with a final message, a London-based message, I think, given the content of the podcast, what would that message be?
I suppose it would be... if you can get into London, go into London, and I suppose support the businesses there at the moment, because there are people open. Obviously the EG interview this week was with Howard Raymond of Raymond Estates, obviously the son of the man dubbed the King of Soho, Paul Raymond, and he is actually opening on the 24th of July his new scheme on the King's Road, which is led by a new Everyman cinema. So he's got faith in the restaurants and retail and leisure side of London. So I suppose we just need to have a bit of faith in it as well.
Well, what a good message to end on. Have faith. I like that. So let's finish up there. Another short but sweet We're Still Here podcast. Louise, thank you so much for joining me. A really great overview of what's going on in the London market at the moment, and one I'm sure our listeners will be really interested to have heard all about. Thank you for joining me, and we will be here still. I always get that wrong. We will still be here. That's the correct way of saying it, next week. And until then, goodbye from me. We'll be right back.